Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello, and welcome to the weekly podcast from the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot, and I am so glad that you all took the time to download us and you're listening today. Our weekly emphasis is bringing interesting people in the world of sports medicine to the podcast, and this week is no exception.
We have Mr. Kevin Bastien,
who is a certified and licensed athletic trainer. He's the director of athletic training services for the Ironman Sports Medicine Institute at Memorial Hermann, has a master's degree from the University of Miami, 20 years of experience as an NFL trainer with the Washington Redskins and the Houston Texans, and was honored as part of the NFL Athletic Training Staff of the Year in 1995. So welcome to the podcast, Kevin.
Thank you, Tim. It's great to be here and to answer questions, share information with your listeners about our profession.
Cool. And so tell us, what did you have to do to become a part of the training staff of the year in 95?
Well, you know what? It's a vote of our colleagues in the league. So sometime in December of each year, all the NFL athletic training staffs get a ballot. And there were some criteria. You know, the team maybe had gone through some adversity, and the athletic trainer's very important part of getting an athlete back or getting through a situation. And in that particular year, we had some injury issues. Typically, it's the team that had to overcome the most injuries, and
right.
Week in and week out. And our peers, after evaluating the year, looked at what we were dealt with in 1995, and they said, you know what, it looks like they met the challenge and were certainly up against it, so they selected us as the staff of the year that year.
Yeah. Congratulations. So were you with the Redskins at that time?
Yes, absolutely, with the Washington Redskins. Yes.
So how did you, and this is, I guess, a regional question, how did you wind up moving back to Texas where, you know, the Dallas Cowboys are such a big entity, as well as the Texans and the rivalries with the Redskins?
Well, an interesting thing, and like a lot of professions, networking is very, very important, and during my time with the Washington Redskins, our general manager, who I was there with, had left and came to Houston to start the franchise here with Houston under the ownership of Bob McNair, and he actually came in 1999, and he started talking to me about the opportunity of coming here and being the head athletic trainer when the franchise got up and running.
Mm-hmm.
So we just stayed in touch, and in the I guess December of 2000, January 2001, we talked at great length, and I showed up in Houston to be the head athletic trainer in February of 2001. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's a big honor to be the head athletic trainer of a professional franchise like that.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was, networking again has a lot to do with it. And obviously you have to perform and those things. But again, had a lot of fun. The 20 years in the NFL was a lot of work, but a lot of fun. Worked with a lot of good people.
You know, it's one of, you already mentioned one of the things that I think is so important that we tell our students all the time, and it's you have to meet a lot of people.
Right.
You have to network.
You know, I spoke to the student athletic training group in January on campus at Texas A&M this past winter, and that was a big part of the talks. I mean, obviously, you want to share with them ideas and how you're going to manage an injury and that type of thing, but it is very, very important to get out and to meet people, find out different disciplines within your profession, and whatever it is. It's not athletic training, it's everything. And I was very fortunate as I came through as an undergrad to get exposed to varying different levels of our profession. And you make a good point. It is very, very important to get out and find out what your niche is going to be going forward.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about athletic training. Now, just so we can set the baseline, we've had athletic trainers on before, but I just want to remind our listening audience what athletic trainers are and what they aren't.
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that question. You know, athletic trainers, our name sometimes is confuses people. First of all, people say they'll use the term trainer and will get confused with personal fitness trainers more than anything else. I mean, I talk to people, family members. I've been doing this for 30 years, and they'll go, "Well, Kevin, can you give me a workout program? I want to work on my abs," you know, and I can do that, but then I quickly, you know, go back and pull them back in and have to re-educate them on what our, you know, primary scope of practice is. But yeah. But really who we are is we're allied healthcare providers that work under the guidance, direction, supervision of a physician. And our scope of practice, you know, it entails, you know, working around managing the healthcare of athletes. And that involves prevention, recognizing injuries, being able to assess injuries, and then when they do occur, how to manage them, how to treat them, and then rehabilitate them, get them back to what they want to do, and that's, you know, obviously compete on the athletic field, the athletic court, whatever the case might be. So obviously we're sometimes I'll to shorten it with people, I'll say, hey, we're like a physical therapist that deals mainly with the athletic population, but we're also first responders as well at sites. So that's probably the best way to describe, in my mind, what we do as athletic trainers.
And it's a huge responsibility. I mean, we see athletic trainers run onto the field if we're watching football or some other sporting event where there's an athlete down. You know, that first responder out there is usually an athletic trainer and maybe a physician as well, but that's a huge responsibility in case they're, you know, severely injured.
Yeah, and we, you know, fortunately our profession has prepared us well, you know, through to become certified, we have to certainly pass, you know, a lot of criteria. And as you mentioned, you know, that first responder, you know, I've been on the site of some very, very bad injuries, and through our training and through our team of other staff athletic trainers, we were able to manage those situations and be able to the end result become a real positive. But but certainly, as we're first responders, we are faced with some very, very serious situations at times.
Yeah, one of your colleagues has had a great quote. And it said that many people look to the athletic trainer as the gatekeeper for all their health care needs. We get calls for all kinds of things, including referrals for specialists from pediatricians to gynecologists.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting morphing of what the athletic trainer is doing, and I think we see more and more of that, don't we?
We do, and you know, from the profession, you know, that goes back into the mid-1900s, and it can even go back even further than that, back into the Greek days, but the athletic trainer was seen as the water boy, and seen as in that respect, it certainly has grown into, you know, many, many more things than that. And I'm constantly fielding questions from friends, family members, and then athletes that that gain their trust. And they do. They need that information. They come to us whenever they need to see any specialist. And typically, if we've been in a community long enough, we've developed a network with all the other healthcare providers, and we're able to give them direction and guidance to those proper personnel.
Yeah, it's so many times people will ask me, or they'll have an injury, and they'll ask me what I think, and I'll say, I think you need to go see an athletic trainer.
Well, and again, you know, I know, speaking personally for myself, I've been very, very, very fortunate to work with, you know, quality healthcare providers from you know, nursing aspect, physical therapists, physicians assistants, physicians. The physicians, their MAs and their administrative assistants, that whole network, you form a team, much like everything else. And obviously your goal is to get the quality care expedited for that particular person as efficient as possible, yes.
So, and I think this will actually segue into this question, and that is, So tell me a little bit about what the Ironman Sports Medicine Institute is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here in Houston, the Institute's been here probably 7 or 8 years now, and it's a group of physicians, physical therapists, and then human performance. We have a biomechanist, an exercise physiologist, a sports dietitian, and a strength and conditioning educator expert on staff, as well as a group of athletic trainers. And together, this team, you know, we're here to serve the needs of the athletic community. And that athletic community isn't just our Friday Night Lights crew. It's the endurance athlete. We work very closely, obviously, our name with the Ironman events, the marathon events, some of the sports that, you know, we don't see day in and day out in our other facilities. And we're able to, in our location here, we feel meet the needs of all of that athletic community. And by doing that here, and we have one location getting ready to expand to our second location on the west side of town, Houston being the size that it is, we felt it was important that we take this model to another location in the city, and then the goal is to go to another location in a couple more years. So again, it's sort of a one-stop shop potential for a patient. You know, if they've obviously here to see a physician for an injury, and we can get them through our physical therapy services, you know, back rehab, and then turn them over to our human performance team who could work on gait analysis, throwing biomechanics, whatever the case might be, and then with our fitness and strength and conditioning educator, do some more functional progression. So whenever they step back into their activity, they're ready to go. They're ready to go back to what they wanted to do, again, as quickly and as safely as possible.
So you're working with athletes of all skill levels.
Oh, there's no doubt. Yeah, we see the you know, the elite of the elite. We see the, you know, the high level professional basketball player, professional football, soccer, and then the Ironman. We again work very, very closely with that population, and down to the amateur, the recreational, which ends up being a majority of our people. Obviously, it's our population that need this care, and they're requesting it, and we developed this facility under what the community was asking for. We, again, in a big city, and this recreational athlete is looking and is needing this care, and so this facility was developed.
As you provide athletic training care for primarily, as you said, recreational athlete, how does that differ from the athletic training care you would provide for professional athletes?
You know, it doesn't, and we take pride in treating everybody the same. It's again, a lot of what we do with our athletic training services is we are in and around our community, and we go outside the Houston community to some of the rural areas that don't have access to an athletic trainer. Some of the schools we work with in these club sports don't have an athletic trainer with them. So we do weekly injury clinics. We go by. They know we're going to be there. Mm-hmm. We're there. We can look at the athletes, screen them, and tell mom and dad, whose guys are, you know, their daughter's sprained her ankle, hurt her ankle, and they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. The sky's fallen, and they need to be caught, you know. So a big part of what we do is with them is we screen them much like we would if we were working with an NFL player. We screen the injury, and first thing you want to do is make sure the athlete understands what's going on here, okay? Mm-hmm. Hey, this is, you know, in some cases, this needs to be seen by a physician. We will help you get to that appointment, make that happen for you. In a lot of cases, most cases, we're able to tell the athlete, we're able to tell mom and dad, hey, this is going to be okay. Let's take care of it in this fashion. We'll give them a treatment recommendation, stuff they can do at home, and then come back and see us in a week. Let's take another look at this, and then we'll take our next step. A lot of what we're doing today, and it's going to be really in the future, is we're going to have to keep people from going to our medical facilities. With the cost of health care,
right.
There's a lot of unnecessary trips to the emergency room and to specialists that are driving health care costs through the roof. And a lot of what we do today, we're doing that. And again, obviously, if they need to go to those facilities, we're the first to say, you need to go get this done. But
right.
a lot of times, through conservative care, conservative management, we can avoid those situations. And that's a big part of, through our injury clinic program we do, that we're emphasizing, and that's going to be emphasized even more going forward.
What do you think is the, if I'm going to put you on the spot here, what do you think is the most common injury that you see that people don't know whether or not they need to go to the hospital or not?
Well, to be honest with you, swelling in a joint scares everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, they see this a swollen ankle,
and they get ugly.
And the ankles
get ugly. That's
they get
sure.
ugly,
yeah.
and they look deformed when it's swelling that's causing that look. And so that's probably the biggest thing that scares people. And as educated as our community is, the availability of medical information on the computer at our fingertips, people still, mm-hmm. when it happens to them, it happens through son or daughter, again, there is anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And, so it's very, very important that we, give them accurate information. We give them information that, first of all, is good, and it calms their anxiety. Let's
mm-hmm.
slow this process down. And make them understand it's going to be okay, and then let's start working through how we're going to get, son or daughter or, adult back into what you want to do,
mm-hmm.
So it's that assessment, it's that education component that that we're trying to do when we're out and about in the community.
One of the long-term, I guess, missions I have is to help people understand ankle sprains better,
mm-hmm.
and that they're not a trivial injury.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes we'll see an athlete, he just sprained his ankle, tape him up and send him back in.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not good, is it? It takes a while for ankles to heal.
Yeah, we're always quick. Obviously, again, we're a competitive society. It's athletics in Texas at all levels are very, very, they need to be managed properly.
Mm-hmm.
Moms and dads are constantly ask us, when can they go back? And I go, well, whenever that ankle is the same as the uninjured ankle. I mean, it's pretty simple. You've got a good side. Hopefully you didn't injure them both at the same time, but
right.
you're always comparing it to the other side. So that's sometimes parents, again, when their son or daughter's injured, they forget that, we have something to compare it to. And our advice is, hey, first of all, we need to get that swelling out of there. We need it to get it to look like the other side. Now we need to get it to function like the other side. And a lot of times if you go back there too quick, too fast, we quickly educate them that you can go back and you may be able to get through it, but you could have a setback that's going to cause you to miss several more weeks.
Yeah.
So, we understand the competitive nature of what your son or daughter, they're in. They're trying to make a team. Their team's going to the state finals, whatever the case might be. But a lot of times my comment to them is, hey, they're young. There's a lot of playing left ahead of them. Let's not push the envelope here too far, or we could do damage that you may not be able to recover from.
Right.
So your point about, making sure that they're back and they're back to where they need to be is very important.
Yeah. There's a lot of concern right now about concussions, especially in football and youth football as well. Have you seen an increase in concussions or a decrease in concussions or more emphasis on that?
Well, I think our, obviously the attention to it at a national level is there. Obviously in my time at the NFL, it had grown from 1989 when I came into the league until I left to the level that it is today.
Yeah.
And that's everything that happens at that level trickles down. So we're seeing it at every level now. Fortunately here at the Ironman Sports Medicine Institute, our concussion program, we feel is is, you know, not where we want it to be, but it's certainly we're being able to help all levels of our community that deal with this problem. Mm-hmm. And so yes, there's more of them because obviously there's more attention to it. Coaches, parents are now realizing you know, the importance of managing these mild traumatic brain injuries and how important it is that we manage them properly and not have second impact syndrome and not put that athlete in a position to injure, you know, part of the body that could have lasting effects the rest of their life.
Yeah, and people forget that concussions are a mild brain injury.
Right, you know, and sometimes I'll go back and I'll just remind myself that it's a bruised brain in a lot of respects. I mean, that's really simplifying it. But, you know, you bruise your arm, you bruise your thigh, that really hurts. Well, if you think of your brain as a muscle or obviously a very, very critical piece of tissue and it's bruised, that only increases the significance of what that injury could turn out to be.
Yeah. And I think one of the things complicating concussions, and especially the discussion about whether or not somebody can come back to play again or return to play, mm-hmm. is there really aren't one set of symptoms or one set of objective tests that you can use to really give somebody the final A-OK.
You know, and that's a really good point. Obviously, we use the impact cognitive testing as one of our tools that we can do some baseline testing mm-hmm. with our athletes and you come back and retest them. A lot of times those tests, they come back, that test shows that they're fine, but that's just one variable. That's mm-hmm. one piece of the pie. There is having the athlete, you know, pass their symptoms be fine. Exertional activity, everything could be fine, and I've worked with athletes in the pro level. Everything turned out fine. You get them outside, you start running around, and their symptoms start to come back. Mm. Again, you're exactly right. It's hard. They're all individual cases. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't compare yourself, your daughter's, you know, mild traumatic brain injury to your neighbor's. I mean, they are all different, and everybody responds to them differently. So they really do need to be handled independently of each other. And again, closely watched.
Yeah, I mean, and folks that are listening that watch professional sports, I mean, we even saw that with Sidney Crosby in the hockey league this year. Mm-hmm. Very difficult to determine when he was going to be able to come back or not come back, and it, very difficult decisions many times.
No, it is. And so, again, as a community, a big part of what we're doing here is educating our community as much as we can. We're developing some information that we're going to make available to all the high school coaches, area coaches, youth recreational sports, that will just, again, give them as much information as possible so they can recognize their athletes when they potentially have this problem and then get them into the right facility for yeah. care and management.
One last topic before we go away today, and we can't help but talk about it, but it is becoming summer. It's getting hot.
Mm-hmm.
You have any guidance you want to tell the folks about hydration?
Yeah, I think I'm from the north, mid-Atlantic part of the country, and when I moved here 11 years ago, I had no idea how hot it gets here in Texas.
So they say it's a dry heat.
Oh, it's a dry heat. That's I've heard them all. I'm still not used to it, but yeah. But no, it's important in hydration. I mean, I went for a walk this morning at 6 o'clock and. You know, and the guys were out, the lawn services were out cutting the common areas, and I just watched those guys, and I just, hydration just goes through your mind constantly. You see these people working in the environment, athletes in it. Hydration is very, very key. You know, the simple things really still ring true. You know, check your urine color. If it's more toward the clear side, you're probably in pretty good shape when you're getting started, but the darker it gets, it's just pretty much an indicator that you're not hydrated properly, and you know, in the schools and a lot of us, there's some numbers out there that say 70% of our athletes are dehydrated before they even start their practice or their event.
Wow.
and that's significant, and we think of it in terms of cramping, and hopefully not anything more than that, but it hurts our performance. I mean, we're all interested in having better performance. If we're hydrated properly, our performance is going to be better. And the more we get dehydrated, you know, we just don't function like we want to. So everyone's excited about running out and, you know, maybe drinking some supplement or some drink to improve performance, just hydrate properly.
Yeah.
And there's a good chance you're going to be able to stay out there and compete and avoid, you know, serious situations if you get too dehydrated.
There's the performance tip of the day. Make sure you're hydrated before you start exercising if you want to increase your performance. Huh?
Yeah, it's hard to recover. I mean, you can never catch up. And you know, and a lot of people, you got to be careful, too, on the side of just water alone, because we can, as you know, get into hyponatremia. So so you want that, you know, you need a little salt in your system down here. When we're sweating, we're losing sodium. Mm-hmm. And obviously we're conscious about, you know, blood pressure and too much salt in our diet. But in Texas, we are losing a lot of sodium when we're out there working in this environment. So replacing that sodium through our diet and through some sports drinks are very, very important to have that optimum balance in our bloodstream, so we're able, again, to function, perform, and avoid serious injury.
Yeah, there are no heroics in not drinking water or fluids.
No, and that's good. You know, one thing I have noticed, you know, being around the community and, you know, obviously at the pro level, we had a real good hold on it. But even being out in the community, the coaches today, you know, they do a nice job of letting the kids have unlimited water. I know the old school approach, I think it's pretty much gone away, and that's important. But again, I can't emphasize enough, those listening, make sure your kids and athletes, they're hydrated before they show up at that practice, and they're going to have a lot more fun out there playing and competing if they're hydrated than they're not.
Yeah. We're running short on time, Kevin. We really enjoyed having you on.
Mm-hmm.
We give all of our guests an opportunity to give the folks that are listening a take-home message. Mm-hmm. You have a take-home message you'd like to give to everyone?
Take care of your bodies. I think we touched on it here at the end with discussing the hydration, but it's everything we do. For the ones that are competing daily, practicing daily, again, stay hydrated. Take care of your body. For the weekend warrior, same thing. I mean, you're going to come out and you're going to play a softball tournament this weekend. Again, take care of yourself. Be hydrated. You know, you're going to go out and play, run around pretty hard. Stretch properly at the end of your activity. A lot of people stretch before when their body's not warmed up. We always encourage everyone to get their body warmed up and then take their, you know, body and their joints through a little stretching motion at that time. They'll get more from that. And then hopefully decrease some of that soreness that they're going to get from playing in their activity.
Yeah.
Probably some of the tips I'd give for today.
Great take-home message. And we'd like to thank not only you, Kevin, but I'd like to thank everybody for taking the time to download us and listen today. Before we sign off here, we do have our T-shirt question of the week from Cheryl, the producer.
What is one profession that athletic trainers are commonly mistaken as?
So be the first one to email us with the correct answer to that question, and you'll win one of our nifty podcast T-shirts. You can send that response to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. Again, be the first one to answer that question. Kevin, once again, thank you for being with us this week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, and everyone to have me on again, just give me a call.
Okay. And again, thank all of you for taking the time to download us. We hope that you join us next week, and we'll have someone else with us that's in the world of sports medicine. And until then, we hope you stay active and healthy.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Cheryl Marek and Samantha Springer, made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our openings and closings are provided by johnmilesproductions.com. Music was provided by David Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.